Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, as we continue our discussion of Coach McCarthy's Thursday season-ending news conference, one of the, I guess you'd say, overarching themes that we didn't really get into in yesterday's show was that McCarthy talked about how this was a successful season without achieving the ultimate success. And I know that's maybe hard for some people to swallow or to process. Either you win the Super Bowl or you don't. But I get where he's coming from. You can't deny that making it all the way to the NFC Championship, especially after a 4-6 start, does not constitute success within the season. But they began the season with the goal of winning the Super Bowl, as they do every year in Green Bay, and they fell short in that regard, and that's just how it fell this year.
Well, I think the big thing that McCarthy said, and it's something he's echoed in the past too, is he's never going to undersell his team and then just try to overperform a low benchmark. They're going to set their aspirations high. That's the way that you really – that's the strong mindset. And it's something that he's really preached to this football team. So, yeah, he did. They came into the 2016 season. Their video package, their video department came up with the, you know, the 2016 Confidants was their theme. They had a countdown running the entire season from the start of the regular season in Jacksonville all the way down to that the night before that game against the Falcons of the days until the Super Bowl from 150 or whatever it was down to 14.
Yeah.
Just to show the football team what their goal is. Yeah, I think that, and I tried to say this too in our insider inbox this week, is that a lot of teams in the NFL, they're just trying to make the playoffs. I mean, that's their end goal. They're trying to strive to be in the position the Packers are in. The Packers here the last 8 years have been operating at an entirely different level. Them and the Patriots on this run of 8 consecutive playoff appearances, it's not easy to do. So, yeah, they didn't get to the ultimate goal, but at the same time, I think one thing McCarthy really tried to illustrate is that that doesn't mean that the season was a failure. There's still a lot of successes, a lot of positives you can draw from a year in which they overcame as much adversity as they did to get back to the NFC title game.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard McCarthy say in the past, in past years, that every season there's a path to a championship. And the path that the Packers took in 2016 was not what anybody predicted. It's not where they were hoping to go in terms of that path, but they still got awfully darn close, even with everything that they had to overcome. And you can't discount that. I mean, with the injuries and the stretch of, you know, road games in November that became really tough for them to navigate, all of that, you wonder sometimes, okay, what are the players thinking when they're watching that video presentation after a 4-game losing streak and then still seeing the countdown, the number of days to the Super Bowl? But as we heard from players in the locker room, they never doubted that they were still going to have a shot at this thing. And that mentality, you know, established at the very beginning, I think is also something that helped to carry him through the tough times.
Yeah, definitely, Mike. And you know, Aaron Rodgers talked about it. It's been, you know, really hammered home here over the last couple months, his message to the team, what he thought they were capable of doing after the 4-6 start. Julius Peppers didn't, you know, I said this before, it didn't get as many headlines as Rodgers, but Julius Peppers was really adamant during that 4-game losing streak that they're going to get it figured out. After every single time, I think I was in every single one of his scrums after games, and he didn't waver in that belief that they could find a way to get this thing straightened out. They did that. They got to the promised land. And as, you know, McCarthy was asked about Rodgers too, and the fact, you know, he's 33 years old now, how big that window of opportunity is. Obviously, after the season, Rodgers mentioned he still believes he can play at a very exceptionally high level for a number of years to come. But, you know, you also need to go all in to you know, focus on winning. The message I thought McCarthy was really important was him saying, you know, you have to max out this opportunity. They weren't far off from their ultimate goal, but you also need to make sure that that, just because you were successful 1 year doesn't mean you're going to make the next step the next. And they need to continue to be focused on doing what they need to do to keep putting themselves in a position to get back to that Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think that was a key piece to his message as well, which is that you don't look at it and go, okay, we had this super hot passing offense at the end of the season. That's all good for 2017. Right. You know, we'll just focus on the other things. It's always about the whole picture. You have to focus on everything. You have to look at the things you do well and make sure that you don't slip and find ways to improve in those areas. Obviously, you also look at the areas that you did not do well, because those might involve more change, more than just a tweak here or there. There may be some more work to do, but you have to keep your eye on the whole thing. And you know, I commend McCarthy for that, because as he says a lot of times, you don't just, you know, show up the next year and change the date and say, okay, we're going to do this to get ready again. That's not the way it works. They evaluate this whole thing. I know when the coaches come back after they go through their own personal evaluations, they go through a scheme evaluation. They review every single play, every snap, all season long, offense, defense, special teams. They go over the whole thing and then set their plan, you know, for the offseason heading into to training camp for where they're going to take the next team.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, Mike, it's like you and me as writers. If we had a boss that's like, you know what, Mike, you had a great year, just keep doing what you're doing. Meanwhile, I'm just going to hamper on Wes for misspelling, you know, all these words and having, you know, bad stories. It's going to create, you know, some animosity. And I think that's really interesting that McCarthy, yeah, you want to improve the pass defense. They're going to focus on it in OTAs. He already said that. But they also want to improve their 7th-ranked passing offense. They want to improve their 8th-ranked run defense. I mean, there's a lot of different areas. Just because you did something well doesn't mean you can't do it better. And I think that's going to be one of the general focuses. Yes, there's areas where they got to make improvements. They know they have to make strides. But that doesn't mean you're going to completely lapse on the areas that you succeeded in 2016.
Yeah, and there's no guarantee that those areas you succeeded in are just going to stay the same. The personnel changes. Lots of things can change from one season to the next. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here. Wes Hodkiewicz there. Wes, the other day on the show, we kicked around some postseason awards, looking back at top performers, memorable moments and things. I wanted to get your thoughts on your favorite or most memorable plays from 2016. Let's start on the offensive side. What snap, what play jumps out at you?
I mean, first thing on my mind is that Hail Mary. I mean, they did it again. I mean, it's incredible. And I think one of the things I want to do this offseason is actually sit down and try to figure out how many Hail Marys have been completed, you know, over the last 14 months now.
Yeah.
Packers have 3 of them.
I know.
Aaron Rodgers, it's funny because Rodgers does so many things well. We've talked about it time and time again on the show. But I can't think of anyone in NFL history, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here or anything, but that throws a Hail Mary as well as Rodgers does. The arc, the arm strength, the positioning of it, the accuracy, it's the total package. And in this particular case, as so many defenders said from the Giants, everyone was anticipating that ball was to go fluttering outside the end zone. And then there's Randall Cobb, all 5 feet, 10.5 inches of him behind that scrum, pulls down the touchdown in such a demoralizing play and a big, big win for the Packers.
Yeah, definitely. The skill of Rodgers' Hail Mary throws is second to none. I mean, there is luck involved in a Hail Mary throw, but you reduce the amount of luck that's needed when you have a quarterback with an arm like that who can throw the ball like that. So I totally agree with your point there.
What was the thing you said to me in Atlanta when, you know, Matt Ryan's coming out and he kind of throws up that Hail Mary-esque pass?
Yeah.
You're like, it's short, and it was, because not a lot of people can make that throw, and Rodgers has done it throwing across his body. He's done it rolling out right. He's done it in so many different ways. The offensive line doing their job for 6 seconds and giving him the time he needs for the receivers to get downfield. An incredible play, and in the fact that you now have the Richard Rodgers one, the Jeff Janis catch, and throwing the Randall Cobb one in there, it's really something special.
Yeah, definitely. For me, I'm having a hard time actually choosing my favorite, most memorable offensive play, because I go back and forth between the pass to Jared Cook at the end of the Cowboys game to set up the game-winning field goal, and then also the 60-yard pass to Jordy Nelson in Chicago on 3rd and 11 to set up that game-winning field goal. I look at the Cook one. To me, the degree of difficulty was incredible there, with Rodgers rolling to his left, needing the extra block from Lane Taylor, continued to move to his left, and then, you know, fires that ball on a dime down the sideline, and Cook, you know, just stops his feet at the right moment to get both sets of toes inbounds to make that catch. And obviously the stakes involved with it being the divisional playoff and a chance to go to the NFC Championship. But there's a part of me that I still feel like I might remember the Jordy Nelson play more because when I look at the month of December, when the Packers beat the Seattle Seahawks at home, I started thinking, okay, maybe this run the table stuff could actually happen.
Yeah.
You go to Chicago for the first of these three division games to end the regular season. You blow a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter. Your season is about to go up in smoke and in perhaps the most disastrous of fashions almost. And this team found a way to make the play to win the game. You know, third and 11, you could have just played for overtime, whatever. Rodgers throws it out there. Jordy Nelson makes a great catch, and Mason Crosby comes out. You know, the whole orchestration of getting everybody up to the line and spiking the ball and nobody false starting for right. a 10-second runoff. I mean, everything that had to happen in that situation happened, and that's when I started to think not only was this run-the-table thing really possible, but maybe there was something special about this team.
Yeah, and it was the Jordy Nelson effect, too. I mean, him being back on the field this year and in the plays that he made throughout the course of the year, yes, that was – by far his biggest. But, you know, the build-up to that, too, and Nelson really starting to look like himself again during that winning streak and getting back to the big-time playmaker, downfield playmaker that I think everybody had become accustomed to him being, and also just stepping up. I mean, it's just, I don't know if there's many more clutch receivers in the NFL than Jordy Nelson. He's made a lot of those type of plays over the years. I know Randall Cobb was the guy who did it in 2013 to get the Packers in the playoffs, but, you know, an equally important catch from Nelson to keep them on that winning streak, keep the momentum going in their way, their direction, and then also to get back to the Cook play. The Jared Cook one was special because not only was it really incredibly critical to them winning that game over the Cowboys, but also just the idea of what Jared Cook meant to this offense this year, you know, especially down the stretch. Such a clutch play. Rodgers joked about it during the week of the NFC title game. You know, there was questions about Jared Cook's hands, and well, that really hasn't been an issue at all. So for him to step up, I think you're looking at two of the top playmakers on that offense, and both of them obviously having a lot to do with the Packers being able to make that run to Atlanta.
Yeah, I think what's special also about both of those plays is the way the fourth quarters in those games went. You really felt like if the other team was going to get the ball one more time, yeah. it was going to be awfully hard for the Packers to win the football game. And Aaron Rodgers and his receivers made sure that the defense didn't have to retake the field.
Definitely. And then if I had to throw in an honorable mention, too, I think you probably have to say the Jeff Janis end-around, right, for 19 yards. I think
in terms of generating fan interest,
I mean,
yeah.
Twitter, I was surprised Twitter held up, honestly, particularly in the Milwaukee-Wisconsin kind of market. That was probably the most notifications and mentions I think I've ever received on Twitter. A very small play, but one that I know Green Bay Packer fans certainly appreciated.
Most definitely. Well, with that, Wes, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, in reminiscing about our favorite plays of the 2016 season, let's switch to the defensive side of the ball. You got one that jumps out at you?
I guess it probably isn't one, Mike, but I think of Chicago in December and the fact that the four consecutive takeaways, you know, obviously there was the Micah Hyde catch interception on the Hail Mary. But then we mentioned, you know, blowing the 17-point lead in the fourth quarter. But one of the things that allowed the Packers to have that, you know, kind of margin for error was how they played in the third quarter
yeah.
with the strip sack of with Julius Peppers, back-to-back interceptions by HaHa Clinton Dix the second time this year. He had a two-pick game. That was right in the middle of the defense sort of turning things around in terms of the turnovers and takeaways. A week earlier had gotten the six off of the Seattle, got four more against the Bears. I think that that was really a turning point. Offensively, you saw how the team came together down the stretch, but for the defense, finally being able to get the takeaways after it had been so difficult, you know, so trying for them to do that, I thought that that was really critical towards how they finished the season.
Yeah, I agree with you. That third quarter in Chicago really was something, and when we talk about blowing the 17-point lead in the fourth quarter, that was as much on the offense as it was the defense. 2-3 and outs by the yeah. offense really put the defense in a tough spot there. So, but building that 17-point lead, the takeaways had a lot to do with that. I look at the end of the season as well. The Minnesota game, if there's one play on defense that sticks out at me, it's that blindside sack fumble by Clay Matthews yeah. against Sam Bradford at the end of the first half. I know the Packers ended up winning that game comfortably, but I remember thinking at that time, I believe the score was 21-13 Green Bay. The Vikings had crossed midfield, and they're looking at either getting to 21-16 right. or 21-20, maybe even 21-all if they go for 2 points after a touchdown right there at halftime. And Bradford just never saw it coming. Your classic blindside sack, and the ball comes out. I think Mike Daniels was the one who recovered it for Green Bay. And the Packers go down the other way in the final minute of the first half and score a touchdown, and suddenly you're up 28-13, and you're back in complete control of the game. That one is one that I'll remember because I thought it was at a key moment in that Christmas Eve game, and obviously, as we've talked about with a lot of these, a game the Packers had to win.
Yeah, I remember I was actually doing our halftime report for that game, so I wasn't in the press box. I'd just gotten outside to the terrace level there, and we do that, you know, open air, and just the energy, the excitement when that play happened. You know, everything Clay Matthews had been dealing with, too, with the shoulder and, you know,
absolutely.
Questions about how effective he could be, really only being a dime rusher for the most part of that stretch after the Philadelphia game. I think such an important moment for him was a huge game overall when you look at his entire contribution. I believe that was Mike Daniels who ended up jumping on that, if I remember correctly. And just the energy and excitement of both the players and the crowd really brought Lambeau Field into it, a very important moment. And then if I can throw one more in there too, Mike, we mentioned Micah Hyde, just his performance down the stretch too. The interception in Detroit when he has to play boundary corner right against the pylon there, and then coming with such a heads-up play against Dallas. You know, the Packers, they ended up giving the ball back, but just being able to stop that momentum of the Cowboys I thought was really important at that point in the game.
Yeah, that was quite a run that Micah Hyde got on there down the stretch. He had the interception on the Hail Mary in Chicago. He'd had an interception the week before against Seattle amidst the five interceptions of Russell Wilson. Makes the pick on the back shoulder throw at the goal line there in Detroit in a big moment in the fourth quarter, and then stepping in front of that wide receiver screen. You talk about just the film study and trusting your instincts and having the guts to do it and communicating to your teammates exactly what you're going to do so that they can be ready to react in case something goes wrong. That play in Dallas, you can't discount that one. That was one heck of a defensive play.
And I know the defense, for all the struggles they had and the adversity they had faced, particularly in that secondary, a lot of people were talking about, you know, certain players and certain coaches, but the job that the Packers did with Micah Hyde and Morgan Burnett this year was just so important, I thought, to the grand scheme of things. Two guys played so many different roles for this defense, and Micah Hyde, when they needed him, came up big down the stretch.
Absolutely. Well, with that, Wes, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. Wes, before we go, I wanted to get some more thoughts from you about this Super Bowl matchup here. Super Bowl 51, Patriots against the Falcons. One team that we see in the Super Bowl quite a bit, another team that is appearing in its first Super Bowl in 18 years. In the Atlanta Falcons, what are your thoughts on how this matchup's going to play out?
Well, it's interesting, Mike, that we have this conversation today at the time we're taping at the 17th anniversary of the Patriots hiring Bill Belichick as their head coach, and just the run that they've got on during that time. I mean, that's a lifetime for, you know, you have kids that were born and are almost graduating high school during that time in which Belichick has been in New England, and what he's built and how they've built it is pretty remarkable. I'm interested in the matchup probably in the middle of the field the most. Obviously, the Patriots have been playing without Rob Gronkowski, but, you know, Marcellus Bennett comes in there, has been a big impact for them. I think looking at those young linebackers and safeties, whether it's, you know, Keon O'Neill just the number of guys that they have there that can match up, I think it's going to be really exciting to see the veteran experience of the Patriots kind of match up with this new breed of Falcons. And I give the Falcons a lot of credit, as Mike McCarthy said this week. I mean, they are a very talented, diverse team, very dynamic, and I think it's going to be a good matchup to watch.
Yeah, I don't see this Falcons team shrinking from the spotlight at all, not the way they played in the playoffs. Now, granted, their two playoff games were at the Georgia Dome, the friendly right. confines, the loud noise. But they took care of the Seahawks and Packers, two teams that were pretty darn good, but they took care of them rather handily. And when I look at it, you know, I know the Patriots are a great defensive team, and you give Bill Belichick 2 weeks on the defensive side of the ball to scheme for somebody, you have to watch out. But you mentioned the Patriots don't have Rob Gronkowski. The Falcons have Julio Jones. Though, if Gronkowski were in this game, those would be the two guys that everybody would be talking about in terms of how are you going to stop those guys from taking over the ball game. I think Julio Jones is the guy who can make the difference here, because I don't see the Patriots having a guy on the offensive side of the ball with his potential impact when you take the quarterbacks out of the equation.
I mean, Chris Hogan. But, I mean, other than that, yeah, I get what you're saying. The thing that's really astounding about New England's defense, though, Mike, I mean, they are just so solid, they're so consistent, but they don't jump off the page. They only had 34 sacks during the course of the regular season. I mean, they had 13 interceptions, but they're just so good and so proficient at protecting the football offensively that they don't really give the opposing offense a lot of room for mistakes. And and they just execute that so well. And you know, they're kind of a hybrid scheme. They have 4-3 and 3-4 concepts, just really have a lot of variation in there to kind of confuse an offense. And, you know, Bill Belichick is going to scheme for specific teams. I mean, that's the thing about this defense, is it really is tailored towards who their opposition is. And, yeah, when you look at Julio Jones, he's a big target and a big guy that you have to try to contain. The Packers obviously had a tough time with that. New England, they have to do it a little bit differently. They got to kind of manufacture it a bit, but they're so good at doing that with Tom Brady as their quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's as much as we talked about the NFC Championship potentially being a shootout between Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers. You talk about a team that probably doesn't want to get into a shootout. It's the Patriots. They want their defense to set the tone in this matchup, but it should be fun to watch. With that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com, on Twitter. He's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. You can find the team account at Packers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.